And I will now so if you use the raise hand feature, then we can start fielding some questions. Norm, I see your hand up and I'm unmuting you now. You should be live.
Thank you, and thank you, Paulo, for the presentation. My question relates to the operational riparian setbacks and what happens to existing structures that may be contained in those areas that are required for setbacks, such as a barn or a outbuilding for storage of equipment, or what happens if there is a roadway currently in that operational or riparian setback area?
Great question. Thanks, Norm. So you said operational riparian setback, and I just want to be clear, the operational setback is different than the riparian setback.
Correct. Two different things. I understand.
Two different things. So, but in general, there are certain exemptions that we built into the order to address situations just as you've described. So, for example, if there's a structure within the setback area, then you can calculate the area that that structure takes up and make up for that in another portion of the setback. So that would apply primarily to the riparian setback requirements, because remember, for the operational setback, that's really for sediment and erosion control. And so if there's a building there, then you would just need to do something to prevent, for example, rainfall from accumulating on the roof and maybe going down and causing erosion issues within that setback area.
Okay, and what about roadways?
Roads is another area where as long as it's a properly constructed road, it can remain in a setback area, but you would have to compensate for the area that's lost in terms of the setback.
Okay.
And again, difference between operational and riparian. So in an operational setback, it might be that you need to have rolling dips or direct runoff, you know, outslope it, things like that.
Great, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, any other questions for Paula? And again, so you can use the raise your hand feature, should be in the lower right-hand corner. And if it's not there, then click on the participants tab. You'll see your name and you can raise your hand there. Melissa, I am, you should, Melissa, do you have audio, Melissa? Melissa, I see your hand raised, but it doesn't appear as though you have an audio device hooked up to the computer.
Chris, it may be that she has called in on a phone line.
Okay.
Maybe she could send an email to one of us on which phone line she is, and we could unmute that.
Okay. Why don't you, Elaine, do you have your email, your Outlook open?
Yes, I do.
Could you tell her how to email you, please?
Yes.
In the meantime, I'm going to unmute Kay. Kay, you should be live. Yeah, so Kay, you don't have to do anything. I will just unmute you and then you should be good. There you go. Now you're live, Kay.
Yeah, okay, great. I'm tag teaming on Norm. And regarding structures,
yeah.
So a lot of the local ordinances require setbacks from structures for fire purposes. And so I understand that you're requiring growers to compensate, but there's a real problem with this. And according to our planners, structures such as bulk tanks, fuel and fertilizer bulk tanks would be considered a structure, and they are highly flammable. So you've got a real problem if you're requiring riparian habitat in areas where you have these flammable structures.
Okay, thank you. Yes, that's another exemption that we did include, and it doesn't require any compensation, and that is if there are legally binding easements or other restrictions that prevent something to occur in a riparian setback area, then they can submit documentation and apply for an exemption.
So I'm not sure how these bulk tanks are considered in local ordinances. I've looked at SLO, Monterey, and Santa Barbara, their local ordinances, but you can't get around the fact that they're highly flammable, and you are requiring extra fuel load with your requirement. So what are you going to do about that? Because I don't think your order is really set up for that.
Well, I think that through the exemption, they can, like I said, submit documentation, and we will consider that on a case-by-case basis. We obviously don't want to be in conflict with existing codes or other regulations.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Kate. And Michael, I'm going to unmute you now. And you should be live.
Thanks. Just had a quick question. Some background. On our southeastern perimeter, we are bordered by Quail Creek, which as I understand is a Scheller 3. But we also happen to have PG&E running a gas line along the perimeter of that creek. One of the exemptions that I saw in there is a utility easement. I was wondering, get some input from you guys on how that would play out. What would that look like on our end?
So what we envision is that you would submit documentation regarding the easement and request an exemption from the setback requirement. And we would review the documentation, and as long as it's in order, then that would be the path that you could take.
Okay. Would we still be required to provide some kind of vegetative setback in order to offset anything, any water control or excess nitrogen or fertilizer pesticide runoff coming into that creek?
Yeah, because that would fall under the surface water protection requirements.
Gotcha. Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, looks like you have a follow-up. I'm unmuting you now.
And just really quickly, Chris, this is Elaine. I wasn't able to connect with Melissa.
I'm going to answer. So, Elaine, I was going to ask her a question for her.
Okay, great. Sure. Thanks, Kay.
Okay, good.
Yeah. So the question is, what should growers do if the river channel changes?
Well, we recognize that river channels are going to change, and that's why once the setback requirement is met, it's met. So if something happens that's out of the control of the landowner in terms of Mother Nature, then when they report that, we would take that into consideration. I will say that most of the time, you know, with a riparian setback in place, the systems tend to seek equilibrium. So we think that this may not be a really big issue, but it's hard to tell. Hard to predict what Mother Nature will do.
So I have a follow-up question. It's kind of the same. It's an exemption question. You have exemptions for man-made barriers. And I asked you about that, and your response was that the growers have to prove that the barrier is being maintained by an agency. In the Salinas Valley, they're not. So the whole valley, all of the levees are maintained by the growers, which means none of them have exemptions. So your land conversion rate is going to go through the roof. I've done the calculations. In talking with flood control agencies, I've talked to Army Corps and the county. DWR didn't answer my call. They're very concerned about all this vegetation that's existing on levees, and then the concern that you're going to add vegetation. So top of bank, I ask you about where the distance begins, and you tell me at top of bank. According to Monterey County, top of bank begins at the toe of the levee on the water side. And so a 250-foot buffer would start at the toe of the levee, go up one side, across the access road, down the other side, and into the field. So both of these agencies expressed extreme concern about how these levees will be destabilized. Now, because the levees are being maintained by growers, they're not in the PL 8894 program, so the Corps can't step in and on this issue, and the county is just currently tracking the issue. But it's a human health issue that you are requiring people to take action that will actually destabilize these levees. So I guess my question is, what are you going to do about that?
Well, I guess I would have to say that the exemption that you're referring to, which is item number 33, it says, for example, a flood control district levee or berm. Again, if there is a legitimate safety issue that precludes the landowner from planting riparian vegetation or establishing riparian vegetation, then we would definitely take that into consideration. I think these things would have to be handled on a case-by-case basis, Kay, because there's a lot of what-ifs that we could come across, and we can't anticipate all of them. But I think we can assure you that we are reasonable. We are not going to, like I said, do anything, require something that's going to be a human health or safety hazard.
Well, you already have one. They haven't been allowed to do any maintenance on those levees since 2008. So the existing riparian habitat on the levees right now is a human health issue. It is a human safety issue. And now you're requiring more.
Okay, well, I would encourage you to put that in your written comments.
It will be, I can assure you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you, Kate. And Willie, I see you're up next, so I'm going to unmute you. And you should be live, Willie.
Thank you. Yeah, kind of the same idea. The stream channel, the top of bank or edge of channel. So like just like along the Salinas or another major drainage where is it, you know, like the sandy bottom where you think the stream runs most of the time? Or how, you know, it's not clear to me how you guys are defining it and how you'll define it in the future.
Yeah, we are still we're still working on that. I'm sorry, did you have another part of your question?
No, that's it. Yeah, it'd be fantastic as we discuss this if you had a strong definition so we can say, yeah, that makes great sense, or whoa, that's way crazy. Because right now, you guys could take it to the nth degree and it would be crazy and not defensible, that kind of idea.
Noted, Willie. Thank you. We will be developing, like I said, outreach and education workshops, and we will be discussing these details as we get closer to getting direction from our board on where exactly we're going to go with the order and after we've received comments. So we definitely plan to do that.
Okay, thank you. So it'd be good for us to comment on that if it's something we care about.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, so there's two more I'm going to take, and then we have to move on in order to maintain our time here. Lowell, I'm unmuting you now.
Okay, guys. A lot of my growers are concerned about the riparian requirement in association with food safety requirements. Can you guys discuss how you think the riparian vegetation and food safety can coexist?
Sure. Hi, Lowell. So first I want to go back to the fact that there are other compliance pathways, right? So if there are food safety concerns being brought up by auditors or buyers, the landowner has the option of participating in the third-party cooperative, for example. And then they just need an operational setback, which doesn't have any vegetation requirements. They also have the opportunity to submit an alternative proposal for some other type of setback that can be protective of water quality. So I would say that's the best approach. And then I would also say that, you know, the scientific literature hasn't really supported the idea that riparian habitat is contributing to food safety outbreaks. But nevertheless, it's a perception and we understand that, which is why we built in these other compliance pathways.
And can I add, Paula, that also during our September 2019 workshop on this issue, one of the things that we talked about and had presentations on is basically the co-management of repairing vegetation and of course cropping. And some people are successfully doing that, and your success probably depends on maybe your buyer. We understand that, but. Okay, I'll take one more and then we have to move on. George, I'm unmuting you now.
Yes, I just wanted to bring it up. It's not just food safety. It could be crop losses from rats and vermin and such. Anyway, that's all I had to say.
Yeah. Okay.